Hello, Dr. Sarah.
Hey, Jackie. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good.
People have been calling you Dr. G as well. So they're just as an FYI. I don't know if you've heard that before.
Okay. I'll answer to all of the above. But my favorite one is, did I tell you the story about the woman whose husband calls me Dr. Hotfried?
Yes. That's my favorite.
Yeah, we did that in one of the...
Yeah. Dr. Hotfried, I forgot. Oh, that's great. Okay, so it is time. It's 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Welcome to our live Q&A with Dr. Sarah. We had so many questions. I know we're going to have callers, so we are going to be strict in this Q&A where when you ask a question, it's only going to be one question, and we're going to have to move on after Dr. Sarah answers that to the next person, just because we had so much, and everyone is so busy. And I just wanted to say something for very strict medical purposes. If you've joined us for Q&As before, sometimes we're on with physicians, so they can say different kinds of things that currently medical doctors can't necessarily do. So I need to read this so everyone can hear it. Information we discuss in today's Q&A is provided for informational and educational purposes only. The information is a result of years of practice experience by Dr. Sarah Gottfried. The information is not intended as a substitute for the advice provided by your physician or other healthcare professional, or any information contained on or in any product labeling or packaging. Please use common sense. Do not use the information on this call for diagnosing or treating a health problem or disease, or changing any prescribed medication or other treatment. Always speak with your physician or other healthcare professional before taking any medication or nutritional, herbal, or homeopathic supplement, or using any treatment for a health problem. If you have or suspect that you have a medical problem, contact your healthcare provider promptly. Do not disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking professional advice because of something you hear today in our conversations. Information provided today and the use of any products or services purchased from our website by you does not create a doctor-patient relationship with you and Dr. Sarah Gottfried. Legally, that requires for you to travel to Berkeley to receive a full history and exam, and Dr. Sarah Gottfried is on sabbatical, so these programs offer group coaching only. Information and statements regarding dietary supplements have not been evaluated by the Food or Drug Administration and are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Okay, and we are ready to go. Dr. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you, Jackie. Thanks for reading that disclaimer. Now we can get on to the fun part.
Exactly. So I wanted to say, if you're joining us live and you have a question, you're just going to press star zero. Natasha, our operator's on the line. Natasha, if you want to explain what they can do to get into the queue.
If you would like to join our queue to ask a question, please press star zero on your telephone.
Great. And so we'll dive right in with the first question, and then we'll see if there are live questions. Sometimes, Dr. Sarah, people are shy, and they just decided to write them in first. So first question, is this something that will fix, and obviously the hormone reset program, something that will fix one's hormones long-term, or is it something that one might need to revisit periodically? If there's a need for repeated hormone rebalancing, how frequently?
Love this question. Love it, because it really sets up a framework for how to approach your hormones. And I want to say that the way you manage your hormones is how you do anything related to health. It's a process, not a destination. So I wish I could say, yes, do the hormone reset. You will be a perfect hormonal specimen for the rest of your life. But that's just not how real life works, right? So the idea here is that in hormone reset, you learn a framework. You learn the Gottfried protocol. You get introduced to the Charlie's Angels, the top three hormones that I find cause the most problems in the female body. And you've got strategies to get started to get these angels back on your side again. Now, with the question about revisiting periodically, what I recommend is that you do your best throughout this course to get into a place of hormonal balance. And we know that that's usually two steps forward, one step back. And also to revisit the questions and your process quarterly. So So I think quarterly is a really good way to approach the frequency of rebalancing. How does that sound, Jackie?
Great. And that's what I'm planning on doing. Do we have any live callers, Natasha, that want to ask a question live? I don't want to leave them out by going on.
We do not have any live questions yet, but once again, it's *0 on your telephone if you'd like to ask a question.
Perfect. Okay, next question regarding the symptoms checklist. Everyone feels symptoms, I like this, like fatigue and crankiness from time to time. Can we really link these feelings to hormonal imbalance?
Yeah, this is a good question. Here's the way I would approach it. Do you have fatigue or crankiness that's causing you distress? For me, that's the line. If you have fatigue and crankiness that is with you from the moment you wake up in the morning and you put your feet on the floor, and it's more days than not, then I would say these are significant symptoms for you. If you feel a little tired because you stayed up with your girlfriends until 2 o'clock in the morning, no, I don't think that's a sign of hormone imbalance. I mean, definitely when you don't get a good night's sleep, your cortisol goes up. But I'm not talking about temporary, brief, minor symptoms. We're talking about symptoms that are causing you distress, that are causing you to not be able to deliver on your mission in this world, on your calling, whatever that is, whether it's to raise children or work for a nonprofit, whatever it is. So that's the crucial detail. And I'm also interested in the past 3 months, the past 6 months. Do you have these symptoms more often than not?
Next question, does hormone balance affect asthma? The reason I ask is it seems like the majority of my weight gain came with asthma drugs. The side effects and contradictions of Advair are just plain scary. They say if you have adrenal or liver issues, I have both, not to take it. Not a clue why my doctor would approve something that may complicate other issues. The bottom line is I'm looking for answers to improve my lung function without dangerous prescription drugs.
Great question about asthma and hormones, and actually I hear about 3 or 4 questions there, so I'm going to address the issue of women and asthma. You know, we know that your ability to breathe is related to your hormonal balance. So for women, it's especially affected by pregnancy, the menstrual cycle, and then menopause. And if you're female, basically you're at a disadvantage because asthma is typically worse than what we see in men because of female hormones, especially estrogen. And if you take on the task of managing your estrogen, especially the fluctuations, that's going to help you prevent flare-ups and severe episodes. So just a quick science moment. You know, I like to interject these once in a while, not too much. Mm-hmm. What we know with estrogen is that it has as much impact on your airways as hay fever or mold. And estrogen is not so much the culprit in triggering asthma symptoms, but it's the fluctuation of estrogen, the up and down of your estrogen levels. That's what causes inflammation or swelling in the airways, and that's what makes it hard to catch your breath. So the fluctuation of estrogen, there are ways to manage this. You know, the time of greatest hormonal flux when it comes to estrogen is in perimenopause. Your estrogen fluctuates wildly, usually starting sometime between the ages of 35 and 45. And if you are able to manage those estrogen levels with some of the methods that we've talked about and keep that beautiful tango between the progesterone and the estradiol, one of your main estrogens, that's your best way of managing asthma. Now, this applies to people who don't have asthma, too. I really think that you want, for instance, if I have a woman in my practice who checks her day 21 of her menstrual cycle, she checks in her saliva her progesterone level and her estrogen level, we want the ratio to be about 300, and that means 300 times more progesterone molecules running around in your blood, running around in your saliva compared to estradiol. And if you have that, it helps you prevent so many problems. It prevents hot flashes. It prevents difficulty with weight loss. It prevents mood issues like depression and anxiety. And it also helps you prevent asthma. So I think that's a really important place to focus. And this woman is right. Many of the prescription medications that are used for asthma are actually steroids. And as you know from our conversations about cortisol as kind of the bad boyfriend you had in college or high school, we know that cortisol causes you to pile on the fat, especially at your belly. So it's really common to have weight gain when you're on steroids, prescription steroids for asthma. So here, yet again, I have this little mantra, which is go to the root cause. So if you're female, I want you to really be managing that ratio between progesterone and estrogen.
Excellent. Natasha, do we have any live calls, or should we go to the next one that has already been submitted?
We do not have any live calls in our queue.
Okay. Next question. I was diagnosed with adrenal fatigue in the past and thought I might have it again, so I started taking a product called Adrenacom. Does Dr. Sir know about this product and if it is effective?
So this is kind of a medical advice question, I would say, because I do not like to promote one particular product over another. I like to really stay very unbiased. I don't have any affiliations with any supplement manufacturers. So the way that I'm going to respond to this is what I would do in my own practice, which is to say, I love that this woman is raising the point that she was diagnosed in the past with adrenal problems. And just as with that first question we had, where our member was asking about, you know, can I become a perfect hormonal specimen and then, like, put the book away? The same point is true here when it comes to being diagnosed with adrenal fatigue. It's not a destination of being cured of your adrenal fatigue, because typically you're going to be at risk for recurrence, especially if you start burning the candle at both ends. So it's very common for women who are diagnosed with adrenal fatigue in the past to have it again. And I talked about some of the treatments that I recommend. The way I approach this is I really want to only recommend the interventions using the Gottfried protocol that are proven with randomized trials. And what I like to look at is when it comes to cortisol and adrenal fatigue, DHEA is also involved in there because your adrenals make a lot of hormones, and we've kind of simplified that point in this course. The question is your cortisol high or low or both? So for someone who has a high cortisol, we talked about things like using, if you use the Gottfried protocol and you're step one, filling in any nutritional gaps, and doing the lifestyle tweaks that you need to make. We talked about tiara time. We talked about meditation. You know, just as I think I shared with you that I learned from my great-grandmother that you don't find the answer to health in a pill bottle, I also think it's really important that you not just rely on one or two supplements for your health. I think they're a better choice sometimes, especially when proven, but I think it's really important to make sure you're doing the lifestyle tweaks as well. So TR time was one thing we talked about. Heart math is another really excellent way of managing cortisol if it's too high. Some of those nutritional gaps that are really common when people have adrenal fatigue and high cortisol include problems with the B vitamins. We know that dark chocolate is actually helpful at lowering cortisol. Chanting is helpful. Massage is helpful. Typically, you need more vitamin B5, also known as pantothene. You need more vitamin C. Those are some of the nutritional gaps. I think we also talked about phosphatidylserine and omega-3s, L-theanine. So those are some of the things that I recommend. I don't know if they're in Adrenacom because I'm not familiar with that product. There's probably about 5,000 adrenal products out there, and they tend to have a lot of different components, not just one. And then we also talked about, for people with high cortisol, using rhodiola Rhodiola is very effective. And then on the other side, for people who have low cortisol, we also talked about some of the things that help there, including very briefly certain nutrients, again, vitamin C, the B vitamins. You know, there's sort of a repeat here. And then licorice and grapefruit juice. Licorice, you have to be really careful with. We talked about this, about how it can raise blood pressure. So you have to be really careful about taking licorice and do it only under the guidance of someone who's an expert at this. So those are the ways that I approach the adrenal fatigue, and that's my response to this particular question.
So next question, how about acupuncture for hormone imbalance?
Yeah. Well, this is a very broad question.
Yeah, it is. And I'm sure it, and please.
Yeah, so let me just start with kind of the pieces that I can bite off and chew with you. So when it comes to acupuncture, I really find that acupuncture is a proven, very effective way, especially when it comes to dealing with cortisol. In fact, I would say if you really understand traditional Chinese medicine, their whole point is longevity, health, and not getting caught up in the psychodrama that many of us in the Western world tend to get caught up in, right? It's not that we have a physical tiger chasing after us. It's just that we feel like a tiger is chasing after us all the time. So I am a big fan of traditional Chinese medicine. I've studied it for many decades. And what I think would be helpful is to tell you about the hormonal conditions where it's been proven to really be useful. So when it comes to menopause, and this means that you're a full year without a period, when it comes to menopause, we know that acupuncture raises your estrogen levels. It raises your estradiol, which is the main member of the estrogen family that you have when you're in your reproductive years. We also know that acupuncture is very effective at PMS. So there was just a study looking at this issue of PMS. Our latest thinking with PMS, if you want a science moment here, is that it's a situation of progesterone resistance, kind of like insulin resistance, if you've heard of that before. You can hear my low thyroid today.
Wow.
One of the symptoms when your thyroid isn't working well is that you can have a hoarse voice. You can hear it in me sometimes. You know, I'm really on my game when it comes to thyroid, but more recently I've been experimenting a little bit, and not all the experiments are working. Anyway, back to acupuncture. So when it comes to PMS, you know, the main idea there is that your cells become resistant to progesterone and some of the daughters of progesterone, like allopregnanolone. And we know that vitamin C is helpful. You know, there's kind of a long list of things that help with PMS. One of my favorites is actually chasteberry. It's been proven in 5 randomized trials to take chasteberry. St. John's wort has been shown to really help with PMS, especially if you are in perimenopause. That combination seems to be really good. Light therapy has been shown to help with PMS symptoms. But when it comes to acupuncture, there was a recent review. This is super exciting. A review of 10 randomized trials. And you don't need to know the details. It just means that this is best evidence, and I really want to keep women safe. So best evidence matters a lot to me. And I've got your back, so you don't have to worry about the details here. But what was shown in this review of 10 trials is that acupuncture reduces PMS symptoms by 55% with no risk of harm.
Wow.
So that's a really good example of what helps with that particular hormone imbalance. One last one I'll mention, because I know we've got women in Peer Trainer who either are or are not doing the hormone reset who have polycystic ovarian syndrome. And the reason I know that is because about a third of the U.S. population has polycystic ovarian syndrome. It's very common.
PCOS, correct? Because that's been written about in our community frequently.
Yes, PCOS, very, very common. And it is the number one hormone imbalance, especially in reproductive age women, but it also affects, it can affect you in utero. It can affect you as a girl. It affects you in menopause, and it's a really important thing to be managing. But getting back to the acupuncture issue, I just wanted to mention that there's one particular part of traditional Chinese medicine that is very helpful. Well, two, actually. So number one, acupuncture in women with PCOS has been shown to regulate ovulation. So it helps women menstruate again. One of the key symptoms when you have PCOS is that you don't have a period. Every month, it's more like you skip a period here or there. And I'm a big fan of using acupuncture before you jump to medications like birth control pills or metformin. So acupuncture can be very effective. And then finally, there's a particular supplement in traditional Chinese medicine. I don't even know how to pronounce it. I'm just going to spell it for you. And it's called Tien Gui. It's spelled phonetically T-I-A-N, capital G-U-I. And that's a particular formula in traditional Chinese medicine that was shown to be more effective than metformin at lowering high testosterone, which is the key problem in polycystic ovarian syndrome. So we're not talking about PCO, but I just wanted to mention that as a couple of other ways that acupuncture helps with hormone imbalance.
Excellent. Do we have live callers? I just want to insert that one more time before we move on.
We do not have any live callers at this time.
Okay, and if you're shy, we're going to be going through. We've got so many questions, so I'm going to ask one more time if there's a live call in the next few minutes, and then we'll just be going through the rest of the questions that were pre-submitted. So, Dr. Sarah, next question: how much wine is too much?
Well, I think this makes us both smile, Jackie. Right?
Yes, exactly.
Because I have to say, I was talking to a woman who is, she's a mom at one of my kids' schools. So I've got two kids, and they're in different grades at different schools. And this mom was a patient of mine for a while, and I saw her yesterday, and she said, you know, I love all your work. I love everything you do. I'm so excited for your book to come out, but don't take my wine away. And I just really appreciate that. I think there's something about this time of life, from about 30-something to, I don't know, 50-something, where it just helps us cope, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here's the data. You know, to answer this question, I always say, okay, what does the science tell us? The science tells us that, based on a study that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association in 2011, that 3 to 6 servings per week of alcohol has been shown to be associated with a greater risk of breast cancer. It raises your estrogen levels, your bad estrogens. So that's not such good news for people who drink more than 6 servings per week. And we don't know what the safest minimum amount is, or maximum amount, I guess, with the way that she asked this question. So it's somewhere between 3 to 6 servings per week. And I would say this is important not just for women who are concerned about breast cancer or have an increased risk. It's important for all of us. So I think that the way you manage your estrogen is crucial to you feeling your best, to really feeling like your energy tank is full, to feel like you're living your life on point, and you want to manage this piece. So one of the ways of managing your estrogen, I think we ran through a bunch of these before, is to really pay a lot of attention to your fiber. And I also think the other one is to be careful about how much you're drinking. And my message here is not that you cut out alcohol unless you have an addictive pattern around it, but instead to drink less, just better quality.
Absolutely. We've talked about that in depth in the cortisol class. And, you know, the next, just for your reference, Dr. Sarah, the people in this Q&A have not heard the estrogen class yet. So that
might be
why some of these questions are here. They've heard the cortisol class and hopefully the thyroid class, unless, of course, they were running late and they had to listen to it another time.
That makes a lot of sense. Maybe I should say one other just quick thing there, Jackie, if they haven't heard about the estrogen yet. You know, the problem here is that it's not like you are only managing one hormone in isolation. So there's, you know, just by teaching this kind of stuff in this way, it's hard to separate cortisol from estrogen, for instance. But what you have heard about is that when you have alcohol, it does a couple of things to the female body. Number one, it raises your cortisol. So if you're kind of a high cortisol person, what I sometimes call a cortisol junkie. I'm a recovering cortisol junkie myself. We know that alcohol is actually not giving you the thing that you think you're getting from it, right? That was a major point when we were talking about cortisol. The other point, which I think is important for anyone who's trying to have a more easeful relationship with their weight, is that it slows down your fat burning by more than 70%. And it's temporary. But for the next 24 hours after you have one serving of alcohol, as a woman, it lowers your fat burning by more than 70%. So that's pretty stunning to me. This is one of those places where I think those facts are really helpful to kind of create some boundaries on how much I drink. So hopefully that's helpful.
Absolutely. I don't know that you said that in the class, so that is a stunning statistic. Next question, just finishing the second part of the cortisol class. My question is, with the supplements, do you have to continue to take them for the rest of your life?
Well, the short answer is no. The long answer is related to that first question we had, which is, what is the process here? And the way that I approach the process, I've shared with you the Gottfried protocol, which is where you take your set of symptoms, whatever they are, and you start first, step one, with the nutritional tweaks and filling in nutritional gaps and the lifestyle redesign. So that's a really important piece. And if that doesn't resolve your symptoms in 4 to 6 weeks, then you move on to the proven botanicals. And if that doesn't resolve your symptoms in the same amount of time, then you move on to bioidentical hormones. And what you find ultimately is that very few people actually need the bioidentical hormones, and when they do, they need far less. So that's the exciting part. But getting back to this question, what I would say is, say you're someone who's got high cortisol, and you've done some of the things that we've been talking about. Maybe you start your Tiara time, or you decide that you're going to commit to doing yoga twice a week, for instance, and you're going to do that along with some phosphatidylserine and adding in some omega-3s, maybe fish oil or krill oil. And you do that for 6 weeks, and you see where you are with your symptoms. If your symptoms are resolved, then that's when I would say you start to taper off of your supplements. You know, for me, the hard part here is not taking supplements. The hard part is sustaining the lifestyle redesign. Wouldn't you agree with that, Jackie?
Completely. I've quit caffeine completely, and it's been a very interesting certain days. I just want a cup of coffee, or I just want green tea, or wine. So I completely agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying.
Yes, and I would say the most effective way to sustain the lifestyle redesign, such as quitting caffeine or staying to your 3 to 6 servings of alcohol per week, is how good you feel. You know, the extra weight starts to drop. You notice that your belly's not spilling over your low-rise skinny jeans anymore. You have more energy to rock your mission. You love up your husband again. Once you start to have those changes, they amplify in all these other parts of your life, and it gets easier. It gets easier. So that's when you are able to start to wean off the supplements, and you see how you respond. But But I think the important part is to do the two together, the lifestyle redesign together with the supplements.
And I'm I absolutely, when we were going through the first class and I had that feeling of I can't deal. And I don't want to deal with that. And I do not feel those feelings anymore. So it really does start to transition when you make those changes. And I'm a perfect example of that. Do we have any live callers, or are we going to the next question?
We do not have any live callers at this time.
Okay, great. I am 57 years old in menopause. My waist is gone. It's round. I used to have such a lovely flat belly when young. Ugh. I do sit-ups, et cetera, treadmill, not as much as I should because I have joint pain. But if I knew there was a chance I could at least get my waist back, I would be more diligent. But I don't know what I should do because I'm not taking hormone therapy or anything. I also have osteoporosis. I just don't know what to take to help. I don't trust the drugs they offer, like Fosamax. Was on that, but my bones, joints were terribly painful. I worry about estrogen. Will cortisol therapy help? I guess that's my question. What can I do to feel great again and lose this stomach? Thank you. I also have no sex drive. I'm a mess. Can you also ask, Dr. Sarah, you mentioned women in their 20s and 30s on the materials. I'm in my 50s. Should I even bother with this? There's probably nothing that can be done with me at my age. I don't have trouble sleeping, really. I've noticed a decrease in energy, but I'm about 15 pounds overweight, and I just can't lose it. I want my waist back. I have no sex drive. I just want to feel like myself again.
Okay. Well, I have to say this woman is in such good company because this is a story that I hear every day in my medical practice. It is my bread and butter. My heart goes out to you, and I've got so many things to help you turn this ship around. So there's a lot of I think there's maybe about seven questions that I saw here, but let's focus on cortisol because, number one, I help women with their hormones from the ages of 18 to 108, and really I don't have an upper limit. I'm 45 years old, so I'm definitely in the camp of I want to help my younger sisters. I also want to help my older sisters and aunts. So it's not too late for this lovely woman who's 57 years young. It is never too late. I feel like there's this way that we perceive menopause in our culture that I want to change. I think a lot of people see menopause as being this slow decline, and I think our culture is to blame for that. I really see menopause as this incredible opportunity where you either decide that you're going to grow or you're going to die. You're going to start the slow decline, and I want you to choose to grow. If you don't make a choice, the default is that you're going to start the slow decline. So I just want to encourage this woman and anyone else who's listening who feels like this is relevant to choose the path of growth. Now, here's what we know, which kind of links together a number of the symptoms that this woman is describing. We know that women who have high cortisol, and even as I say this, I'm oversimplifying. What I'm talking about is high glucocorticoids. And please don't run for cover with me saying that. The main hormone there is cortisol. And we know that high cortisol is linked to obesity, especially belly fat, because belly fat has four times the number of cortisol receptors, which are like the locks on the door of a cell. There's four times as many cortisol receptors in belly fat compared to fat elsewhere in the body. So if you're a high cortisol type, like I used to be, you are in this vicious cycle of just creating more and more and more of a muffin top. And the more stressed you are, the more the muffin top's going to grow. So that's the cycle that we want to break. The other piece that knits this together, another bit of evidence, if I had someone like this in my practice, as I do every day, is that high cortisol is linked to osteoporosis. It causes a lot of wear and tear in your bones. And I can't give medical advice about taking medications like Fosamax, but what I think is really important here is to address the cortisol. I think if you started with step one of the Gottfried protocol that we've discussed in Hormone Reset, that's a really important place to begin. And you may even want to consider testing your cortisol because the stakes are higher for you at 57. The stakes are higher. You already have osteoporosis. You used to have a flat belly, and now you can't see your waist. Because the stakes are higher, I would say this is a good situation to work with the doctor, your local doctor, and test your cortisol. And you can even test it on your own. I think we talked about this before. Should I mention some of the labs that help people test these things, and they don't even need a doctor to order the tests? Is that worthwhile, Jackie?
Yes, and also we will give a resource for physicians, you know, the Body Logic physician network as well. So we'll give that to everyone. And if you want to just comment on both, that would be great.
Sure. So in terms of working with clinicians, I'm a big fan of the Body Logic group. I'm a big fan. And I'm also training a group of clinicians who are here in the U.S., mostly women of all different stripes, from physicians to surgeons to chiropractors who want to learn the Gottfried protocol. So that's also upcoming.
And we cannot wait for that, by the way.
Thank
been a
you.
Major question, and we are so excited about that.
Thank you, thank you. But when it comes to measuring your cortisol, what I suggest is one of two things. I always like to give you a couple of options so that I'm not siding with one particular lab or supplement. And one option is canaryclub.org, and I'll just spell it for you, canaryclub.org. Another one that I really like is called mymedlab.com, mymedlab.com. I don't have any financial disclosures for any supplement or lab companies. These are two that I just encourage people to use, because if your local doctor isn't willing to test your cortisol, that's another way for you to be empowered and to manage this cortisol on your dashboard. I would say for this woman who's 57 years young, who wants to rock her skinny jeans, I'm totally projecting that onto you because that's something that I want to do for the rest of my life, and especially when I'm 57 and 97, I would say it sounds to me like the number one hormone for you to manage on your dashboard is cortisol. It is the number one hormone that's up for you. I want you to manage it. It could really help you with the osteoporosis. That's what I would tell someone in my office, and also help you with the muffin top. One last thing about the muffin top that I want to mention. You can tell I'm passionate about this.
Yes.
So when it comes to the muffin top, I was reading one of my favorite scientific journals, which is O Magazine. And it might have even been the O Magazine, Jackie, where Dr. Oz was singing the praises of Pure Trainer. Wasn't that December of 2011? Is that right?
I think it was January, but maybe you're right. It might have been December. I can't remember if it was December or January. Yeah, that was so good. Of course, we were so excited. That was a fantastic
issue.
I was so
excited. I think it was the same issue that had an article about women who were overweight, similar to this lovely new friend of mine who's 57, who did a mindfulness program at UCSF. And the women who did the mindfulness program compared to controls lost weight, lowered their cortisol, and reduced their waist size, their abdominal inches. So that's a really beautiful way to be managing your cortisol, to do mindfulness together with some of these other parts of the protocol that I've mentioned.
Oh, excellent advice. Next question. I would like to take the hormone reset supplements to address some depression and insomnia I've been experiencing for the past year after starting the mini birth control, and I don't know how to pronounce that, thyroxine, to treat my hypothyroidism induced by TX for Graves and PCOS. I know you just addressed PCOS. I'm wondering if there are any contradictions in the use of these supplements and the use of thyroxine and birth control.
Yeah, so this is a medical question. And the way that physicians and pharmacists address this particular question about interactions between supplements and a prescription medication is for you to have a consultation with your pharmacist. So this woman is taking a mini birth control pill. I'm not a big fan of synthetic hormones, so I'm not a big fan of the mini pill or even the regular birth control pill. But whoever is prescribing the mini birth control pill and the thyroxine, which is basically synthetic T4, that's your source for looking for interactions and also contraindications. It's a medical advice question. I don't know your full history and exam, so I can't answer that specifically for you. For the most part, supplements are pretty safe. You probably know some of the ones that you have to be more careful about, including, for instance, St. John's wort. You don't want to take that along with any other antidepressant. And kava, you know, any of the supplements, the herbs that have any potential to cause any harm to your liver, those are the ones you want to be the most careful about. But I think, you know, we talked about PCOS and how beneficial acupuncture is. Maybe one other piece of advice I can or information I can share for this woman is to talk about some of the other things that help with PCOS. Would that be all right, Jackie? Because I don't want to just tell her, you know, go talk to your pharmacist. I'd like to give her at least a few juicy nuggets here. So when it comes to PCOS, we already talked about acupuncture and this herbal formulary from traditional Chinese medicine that I can't pronounce, T-I-A-N-G-U-I. The other things that are really helpful, and listen up because this is super exciting. We know the main problem in people who have PCOS is that their testosterone, their androgens, are actually pretty high. And there's definitely a big stress component. So it tends to be that cortisol is along for the ride. Cortisol is also high, so I think this woman needs to address that. It's also involved in the thyroid. It sounds like all of her Charlie's Angels are probably misaligned to one degree or another. But when it comes to PCOS, we know that reducing the glycemic index of the food that you're eating really helps PCOS. Here's the data. It's from Australia. Within 7 days of reducing your glycemic index, so eating foods that are low glycemic, you know, choosing blueberries instead of bananas, when you do that for 7 days, it reduces your androgens, your testosterone, DHEA, by 20%. That's pretty significant. The other supplements that are helpful, and again, you'd want to check these out with your pharmacist and with your prescribing doctor, include something called inositol, I-N-O-S-I-T-O-L, very effective. A number of studies in the New England Journal of Medicine showing that inositol helps lower testosterone by more than half. It also lowers blood pressure and triglycerides. It works even in women who are lean, who have polycystic ovarian syndrome. Vitamin D is also really helpful in PCOS. Chromium, I'm sure you've talked about chromium in other places, Jackie. Cinnamon is also very effective. You know, it's such a modest little spice that we take for granted, and it's a natural insulin sensitizer. I kind of mentioned off the cuff some of the prescription insulin sensitizers that help you turn around that situation with insulin resistance where your cells in your body get numb to insulin. Cinnamon is a key one. And I am a big fan of using cinnamon and other botanicals before you resort to things like metformin. And as I mentioned also, the T-I-A-N-G-U-I, I really need to learn how to pronounce that, is another one that works and is more effective than metformin. So those are some suggestions for her, but I think the main point is you got to talk to your prescribing doctor and your pharmacist about interactions and contraindications.
And next question, have there been studies on the effects of marijuana on hormone function, particularly cortisol? I imagine I'm not the only one with this question.
This is a great question, and my short version is I don't actually know. I don't know. Let me just do a quick little, couple of quick little studies, look at a couple of studies and share them with you. I don't know if this is true across the board because I haven't exhaustively looked at these studies, but I'm looking at a couple of studies showing that marijuana actually increases cortisol and decreases prolactin. Here's one other study from 2009. So it sounds to me similar to alcohol in that you get kind of that initial feeling like it's relaxing you, but you're not actually getting the relief that you're hoping for. So here's a study of blood levels of cortisol in people using marijuana, and they found that the more you use marijuana, the higher it raises your cortisol. So there was what's called a dose response, meaning that marijuana raises cortisol and it's dependent on the dose. So what that means is for people who tend to have low cortisol, that may actually make them feel like they're more in balance. I'm not recommending it because there's, you know, this is a like a much more complex discussion. But it looks like for the most part, if you have high cortisol, it's going to raise it even more, unfortunately. So that's my answer on marijuana.
Okay, so next question is, Dr. Sarah has not yet referred to or only briefly referred to diet with regard to cortisol function. Can she elaborate on diet and hormone function?
Yeah, good question. I'm going to focus on cortisol because otherwise I could spend about an hour talking about this. Here's what we know when it comes to food and diet and your cortisol levels. And I don't think we talked about this first part previously, so this might be new information. So listen up. For people who go on Atkins, who drop carbohydrates completely, or, for instance, they do the first 2 weeks of the South Beach diet, that significantly raises your cortisol level. Significantly raises your cortisol level. It makes your body more stressed to drop carbs. So I'm not a big fan of dropping carbs because of this effect of raising your cortisol level. I think it's much better that you use slow carbs, the ones that we burn slowly. The other important point with being on a no-carb diet is that it raises something else. It raises something called reverse T3, and this basically blocks your thyroid receptors. So those cute little locks that are on your cells, the key is usually thyroid hormone or insulin or one of these other hormones that we've talked about. Reverse T3 blocks those little receptors. They jam the lock so that you may have normal thyroid numbers. You may have a normal TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, and yet feel like you're low in thyroid because reverse T3 is high. So that's one comment about diet. I think I mentioned a few on our call together, but I'll just recap. Number one, alcohol raises cortisol. That's a really important piece. We know that eating refined carbohydrates raises cortisol. So both eliminating them completely and also eating the refined carbohydrates raise cortisol. What you want is that lovely Goldilocks position where you're eating the right number of slow carbs for you. You've calibrated it. Number three, we know that dark chocolate lowers cortisol. And I think I mentioned this. This is probably my favorite study ever. And then number four, we know that omega-3s, fish oil, lowers cortisol. So those are some main points about food and the effect on cortisol. I'm going to save my other comments about food and the effect on hormones. I think I mentioned earlier that fiber lowers your estrogen. But I think that's a good response to her because I think we're only like a third of the way through our questions so far.
Yes. I know. I was just looking at the time. The next question, it's a fairly long question.
Maybe we could just find the question here. Let's see.
Yeah, the last one is help. What's a person to do? I think the biggest question here is I was at 46 at that point. I managed to lose weight fairly easily down to 132 pounds from 147. I'm 5'2". Over the years, I managed to keep it off by carefully watching everything I ate. Last summer at 53, I started to gain weight. I'm now 145. And then she goes through her diet of you know, all sorts of things. I eat only whole natural foods, loads of fresh vegetables, protein shake, flaxseed, chia seed, kale and spinach. I exercise 2 to 3 times a week. I walk briskly. I do yoga. She does several different weight loss pills, L-carnitine, things from Peer Trainer, Real Dose, BioTrust Nutrition.
Yeah. So let me just jump in here because she's on more supplements than I think Suzanne Summers. And I just want to make the point here that I don't think you're going to find the answer to managing your weight with all of these supplements. Honestly, I can't keep track of the number of supplements that you have because you've mentioned so many of them. And I really believe when it comes to supplements, you want to use the 80-20 rule. You know that rule where 20% of your efforts yields 80% of your results? And I would say when it comes to supplements, I can't keep track, honestly, of more than about 5 supplements at a time. So I like to really focus when it comes to supplements. I don't just stay on them and take supplements all day long. Some people can manage more, like 8 to 10, but I think this woman is on way too many. Anyway, to me, this woman is in the perfect place. I don't see any mention of her hormonal balance. She's 54. She's at that classic age of being in hormonal balance. What happens as you age is that cortisol goes up, especially if you're not managing stress in a skillful way. You also have estrogen dominance until about a year before your final menstrual period. And then the other question is, what's going on with the thyroid? So I would say, in response to the plea for help, I don't think all these supplements are the answer. Clearly, they're not working for you, right? And I think the answer is to look at your Charlie's Angels. So you started with the hormone reset. I'm so glad you're here. You may want to do some testing using those labs that I mentioned before to really look at your Charlie's Angels. And what I like about that is if you're doing everything right and it's not working, it means that you're missing something. And I find for most women what they're missing is the hormonal piece. So I'd say go through that questionnaire, figure out where you want to prioritize with your Charlie's Angels, which again is your cortisol, your estrogen, and your thyroid, and figure out what needs to be tweaked there. I think that's the really important place to focus.
And then obviously build the relationship with the physician.
Yes. And, you know, one other comment I wanted to make here, it looks like she eats very cleanly, and I haven't spent a lot of time on food other than how they affect your hormones. And I just wanted to mention J.J. Virgin's Virgin Diet Challenge here. I'm doing it right now, and I just find it's a very effective strategy for people who struggle with their weight, who still have more weight than they want, and they feel like they're doing everything right. So I'd say check your hormones, take a look at J.J. Virgin's new book, The Virgin Diet.
Yeah, when most people that actually are in the hormone reset have definitely checked it out. It looks like she's even eating that way, which is probably maybe where some of the frustration's coming from a little bit.
Sure. Well, then I would say hormones.
Absolutely. The next question, I just wanted to interject there just with that because I'm reading and it says, you know, protein shakes, flaxseed, chia seeds, sometimes with berries, loads of vegetables, salads at lunch with chicken, beans, you know, it just, I can see why she would be so frustrated when she's writing all what she's doing. here. So I completely agree with you, and just obviously, of course, everything you said. And sometimes I want everyone to know I'm just as busy as everybody. And the last thing I wanted to hear from Dr. Sarah was that, you know, go to a physician, that it could be hormones. And I just said, when am I going to find time for that? What am I going to do? But her main mantra that she said in the program is that it's easier to fix than it is to live with the symptoms. And I was even personally a little bit doubtful about that, because I thought, oh, who has the time to really fix this stuff and make the time for TR time and all the things that she said. And I'm a perfect example of someone who is reticent and then about going. And I'm so happy I did. You know, for me, cortisol was obviously an issue, and I always felt like, oh, I just can't deal. I have way too much to do. And even just recently, you know, my husband just went away for a business trip, and I remember every single time before he went away for a business trip, I would just think, oh, my God, and I'm not going to be able to drink wine because I'm the only one in the house with the kids, and how am I going to deal? How am I going to deal? And this is the very first time that the questions didn't go through my head of how am I going to deal. It actually wasn't even – I specifically said last night, wow, I don't have that same I can't deal. So if any of you are thinking when you hear Dr. Sarah answer some of these questions of, yeah, you know, consult with your pharmacist, go to the doctor, I can't reiterate enough how happy I was that I made the time to go to the physician, made the time to take the tests. In fact, you know, for me personally, it took about 15 minutes because they'll even schedule you before work because you have to fast with some of these things. So I just wanted to, you know, just run that by everyone here of just, you know, sometimes you think, oh, how am I going to get to the physician? And what she said, because she repeated it so many times, is something that I really found true, and it's really what made me go, that it was easier to fix than to live with how I was feeling.
I'm so glad you raised that, Jackie, because just as you shared in your own story, I feel like this woman who's 54 years young and is talking about what she's doing to manage her weight, I feel exhausted reading the list of all the things she's doing. And I'm not saying that. I say that with so much compassion and love because I used to be that person. I used to work that hard to fit into my jeans. And that degree of effort is not necessary. So I think this is a further elucidation of the point that you just made, Jackie, that, you know, if I had a woman in my practice who was 54 who had a similar story, I would say, sounds to me like you should check out your cortisol because it sounds high and it sounds like it is sabotaging your efforts with losing weight. Number two, I wonder if you have a borderline or low thyroid. Get it tested. Don't use that old range that's being used by most conventional physicians. Use the optimal range that we talk about in hormone reset. And then number three, do you have estrogen dominance? Those are the three main things that will completely thwart your efforts at losing weight. But I just wanted to make the point that look at how much effort this woman is making with her weight. We didn't even read all the things that she's doing because she's doing so much. Like she's spinning so many dishes and not moving the needle. I think I'm mixing metaphors. But in any case, you get my point. My point is
right. That
effort is not necessary. We can make this easier. Address those Charlie's Angels.
And we only have 10 more minutes for this call. Rest assured, if you did ask a question and you haven't heard your question answered yet, we will get to it the next time. So I just wanted to make sure that everyone knew. For the live callers, Natasha, is there anyone else in the live that has been patiently waiting to ask a question, or should we go back to the previously submitted questions?
We do not have any live callers at this time.
Okay, great. So the next question, my question is, does the supplement recommendation also apply to women that are over 50? and in the midst of menopause. I strength train 2 to 3 times a week, cardio workout 5 to 6 days. My diet consists of low-carb, high-protein, which has made a huge difference in how I feel, weight, energy. However, I feel I need tweaking, especially pre-holiday season and the dark days.
Yeah. So I'm going to actually group the next 3 questions together because they're very similar. And I've already mentioned that the advice that I give, both in Hormone Reset and also in my book and on my website, it applies to women who are between the ages of 18 and 108. So it's across the board. If you're 50, it means that this does apply to you. Now, let me say more specifically that when you're in menopause, when you're over 50, you want to look at, okay, these studies that were done, were they done in teenagers? Were they done in men? Or were they done in menopausal women? And one of the studies that I think we talked about, I can't remember if we got to this, but let me just say it here as an example. Maca is one of my favorite botanicals to use in menopause. You have to be careful with it. As with everything, you don't want too much, you don't want too little. But maca raises your good estrogens. It raises your estradiol. There are several studies, randomized trials, in women in menopause that show that maca helps you with your estrogen balance. It reduces insomnia. It helps with depression and anxiety. It raises sex drive. You don't want to get so much of it that it makes your breasts hurt and it causes estrogen dominance. You want to find that right dose for you. So maca is a good example where we've got really good proof in menopause. That's not true across the board for every single supplement, right? It just kind of depends on how the studies were designed, and then there's kind of this art, not just the science, but the art of how we share this information with you. So that's my answer for this woman in terms of the supplement recommendations. I think one of the things that happens in the holiday season, and as this woman described the dark days, is that when we're in the holidays, this is certainly true for me over Thanksgiving this past week, when we're in the holidays, we know that your stress levels are higher. Cortisol is probably higher if you're able to make sufficient quantities. And so that's where we really want to up the ante with managing some of these hormones. So we want to get religious about taking the omega-3s or the phosphatidylserine. There was another question related to this, someone who's asking a medical question about a type of tumor that she had and how she had her adrenals removed, and this is really a medical question that I can't answer. I can't tell her which supplements are a good idea. It's something that she would need to do with her local doctor, maybe her pharmacist. So I think it's important that she talk to a physician. She even says that she's got an appointment next week with her. But when you have had tumors on your adrenals, you know, you really have to be super careful about the whole cortisol balance piece. Another person related to this was asking about doses. Should we spend some time, Jackie, on doses? Is that, you think that's worthwhile?
Or we can just write it up and send it out in a PDF as well. It's whichever. I think that might almost be a better use of time, but we could go through it, because that's what the cortisol. So actually, we'll go through it. So vitamin B, vitamin C, all of these that you were talking about in the cortisol call.
Yeah. So what I'll do is I'll send you some of the doses that I recommend. Again, related to what I just mentioned with kind of the design of a study, it's not like there's one dose across the board for everybody. That's been the old paradigm of, you know, what I would call old school medicine. What you got to do is you got to find the right dose for you. But based on the studies that have been done, for instance, if you have a problem with low progesterone, we know that vitamin C at 750 milligrams raises your progesterone. We know that 1,000 milligrams helps to lower your cortisol. When it comes to the vitamin Bs, I'm not going to go through each one individually because there's so many of them. But we know, for instance, for women who have PMS, we know in those women that vitamin B6, 50 to 100 milligrams is the right dose. We also know that they tend to be low in vitamin B1 and B2, but we don't have randomized studies showing the right dose. When it comes to phosphatidylserine, I usually suggest starting somewhere between 200 and 400 milligrams a day, but this is where you want to individualize. You want to think about your body as being this matrix where you push on the matrix in a positive way. You do that with the exercise you're doing and eating the healthy food. When you push on the matrix and you give your body 200 milligrams of phosphatidylserine and you feel more calm for the next week, that's really important information. We know that higher doses, when it comes to phosphatidylserine of 800 milligrams, don't seem to be as effective at lowering cortisol. So my answer is to give you some ballpark ranges. I can't give you the one-size-fits-all. I wish I could, but that's just not how the human body works. And then last question was about rhodiola, because that is my favorite herb when it comes to managing your cortisol. Let me just say a quick dose on that. When it comes to rhodiola, you have to be a little bit careful when it comes to herbs about whether you're talking about a tincture. You know, are you talking about capsules with milligrams, or are you talking about like the raw herb itself? But I can tell you, when I take rhodiola, I typically will take about somewhere around 200 milligrams. I tend to be high in cortisol in the morning, and we know that 200 milligrams twice a day is what was shown in a randomized trial to be effective at lowering cortisol. And there's even some studies showing that it helps to take it together with ginkgo. It also seems to help with exercise endurance. And there's also some studies of rhodiola using it as a treatment for depression. But with my high cortisol, what I recommend is starting with 200 milligrams and seeing how that helps you. You know, I have a patient I talked to yesterday who's 55 years young, and she is someone who just is an incredible online personality. I'm not going to say who she is, but she's got a very busy life, and she was struggling with mood issues, with really feeling moody as her period starts to get kind of wonky. And we found that her cortisol was high, started some rhodiola, and she says, oh my gosh, it's a godsend. It's a godsend. So she absolutely loves this stuff. Rhodiola has really done the trick for her. It's helped her with energy and with mood, and it's lowered her cortisol. Her cortisol is now normal.
That's a fantastic testimonial right there. Wow. So the next, I want to be really mindful of time. Do you have about 3 more minutes and just to answer the next question, or should we table this for the next Q&A?
If it's a quick one, I could do one more.
I think the next two were all both about hair loss. I don't know if that's quick for you or not.
Well, why don't we get the conversation started with hair loss? Hair loss is a very long conversation.
Yeah, that was my guess.
But let me, how about if I just say,
go ahead. No, please, go ahead.
So here's a couple of thoughts on hair loss. I've written a lot about this recently, and I think actually on Peer Trainer, you've got some really good articles on hair loss. And here's my problem with hair loss. I really feel like hair is such an important issue to women. It's right up there with our breasts and our skin. It's not the same as other body parts that we feel more neutral about, you know, like our toes, or, well, I don't know if you have a part of your body that you feel more neutral about. But when it comes to losing hair, I just feel like this is the thing for women 35 plus, where they just really want this to be taken seriously and not dismissed. And time again, I see it dismissed. We don't have any great solutions. I really wish we did. But the strategy when it comes to hair loss is the same strategy we've been talking about all along. It is, number one, what is the root cause of your hair loss? And then number two, apply the Gottfried protocol. And that, again, is that you look at the nutritional gaps. You know, is it that you're really low in iron? Do you have a ferritin that's less than 7? If you have hair loss, you should get a blood panel with your doctor that includes a ferritin, a CBC to look for anemia. That's the number one cause of hair loss that we see. You should get a measure of anemia, like a low blood count.
Yes, right. Wow. That's the number one cause that you see. Wow.
That's number one, insulin resistance, both low and high testosterone. The list is pretty long of all of the causes, but I really recommend working with your doctor or asking to be referred to a specialist, making sure that you have the right blood panel and that you address the root cause.
Mm-hmm. And this person said my gynecologist checked my hormones twice, including FSH, said they were fine, although my estrogen was 29 first time, 70 the second time. And this particular person also is unable to lose weight, trouble sleeping through the night, loss of interest in sex, mood changes, aches in muscles and joints, and fatigue. My doctor checked my thyroid and said it was okay.
Yeah, so again, I would say this is not a thorough evaluation. So when it comes to hair loss, you want to look at this really extensive blood panel that includes checking your Charlie's Angels, not just your estrogen level, but how's the ratio with your progesterone, like we talked about a couple of times already. And then you also want to know about cortisol. You want to know about fasting glucose and insulin, because insulin resistance causes hair loss. You want to know about testosterone. You want to know about ferritin and the amount of iron that you have in your body. You want to know if there's an autoimmune problem. We usually screen for that by doing something called an ANA, anti-nuclear antibody. So those are, you know, there's like a long panel that I suggest to women who are in my practice, and then I refer them to a dermatologist who specializes in hair loss, because this is the kind of thing that you want to be doing all day long every day and not just get dismissed by a gynecologist, for instance. And as a gynecologist, I understand that, but I also feel like we need to do better with this particular gap when it comes to women and hair loss. We need to do better at finding the root cause and then coming up with the natural solutions, because I don't think Rogaine is the right answer. You know, the problem with Rogaine is that you use it to reduce hair loss, and then the minute you stop the Rogaine, you start to lose the hair again. It doesn't address the root cause. One other treatment that's not approved in women is something called Propecia, or finasteride, and that gets rid of every testosterone molecule in your body, and I don't think that's a good solution either. So, you know, I think we should start a revolution, honestly, around hair loss. We've got to do better in terms of helping women address it and identify these root causes and then figuring out the natural solutions.
Well, Dr. Sir, I know you're back to back to back today. Thank you so much for addressing the first half of the questions. For everyone listening, we will get to the next set of questions. I know it can be frustrating when you haven't heard your question answered, but we will. And if you, you know, have different ones, you can always, you know, send them into the coaching team. And again, Dr. Sarah, thank you so much. We'll be in touch and we'll schedule the next one, and we'll continue with if you have more to say about the hair loss, because it is probably a question that even I get. You know, people are like, oh, I heard biotin. Will that work? So I know that there's so many different things surrounding this issue, and it affects so many people.
Well, it affects 50% of women at age 50. It's a very common problem, and some of it's genetics, but whenever there's a problem and there's not one clear solution, it means that we just have not figured this out. So I'd be happy to talk further about it. So happy to be on the line with you, Jackie, and with all of our listeners. Hooray, hooray. Happy hormones, everybody.
Yeah. All right. Talk to you very soon. Thanks again.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.